Hi, folks. I'm Elmer Jensen. I'm a world-class DJ, top of the food chain muskie guide, stare-down champion, skateboarding pioneer, and a bass player for the Muskie Shop Boys. Join me and my friends, Joe Booker, Pete Mania, Steve Paul, Steve Herbert, Russ Smitty Smith, Matt Rayleigh, multiple manufacturers, and of all the Muskie Shop staff, July 17th at the Muskie Shop Bash.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Jay Bird, are you ready?
Steve Moreno, I was born ready.
For Elmer Jensen's full-on one-man everything. I don't know. Oh, Elmer.
Elmer is a magician. Mm-hmm. That's really what he is. He's also a chameleon.
Switch hitter, some might say.
I mean, he could do everything.
Why don't he do
it? Oh, wait till we get him on film at the Bash. Oh. I just can't wait for this, you know, a couple days away. Oh, my God. The forecast looks great. Elmer's going to be there. You're going to be there. Mm-hmm. Joe Booker's going to be there. Pete Maina, Steve Herbeck.
Matt Rayleigh. Yeah, Matt, it's going to be fun. You guys are sick of hearing about it.
You guys are sick of hearing it, but hey, you know, it'll be over in a couple of days. We're going to try to get some great little video recaps and make some kind of like a little
things.
You know, put something together.
Absolutely.
Get her done.
It's Wednesday, my dudes. And yesterday, the new video came out. Speaking of Pete Mania, if you will, that was fun.
That was good. That was fun.
I'll tell you, I had a hoot fishing with Pete. Great angler, just really funny. The outtakes are better than the show, but you know, it's family friendly here, folks.
Don't touch me.
Don't touch. Yeah. Oh God. There's a lot of. Put that one in there. There's a lot of funsies in there, but Pete is a hoot and such a great angler. And you know, you look at the best of the best of the best. It's Booker and Maina in my book.
Yep.
Everybody else is just trying. But Pete is such a great dude. And we'll have some more Pete content coming out and fun stuff. And definitely, you know, make her out for the Bash. And you can see Pete. You know, we got a lot of setup to do tomorrow, Jay. Me and Jay are like, oh, no. There's so much to do, so we're going to keep it kind of brief. We will have some mega, super awesome live podcast, okay? So if you're coming to the Bash, we are going to have a live podcast. We're going to do it after the Bash officially ends, so we'll probably start like at 5:30 maybe. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I'll be emceeing
the thing. 6 o'clock. Yeah, the Bash starts at 1.
Right. And so as long as we got a little smattering of you, we will do the live podcast and answer some Q&A and have some fun. We'll see where the night takes us, if you will. I don't know what's going to happen. We might play guitar. We might scream. We might scream and play guitar. There might be dancing. Dancing doesn't really translate that well to a podcast format, I just realized, but we can try. Might be interviews. Who knows? We might get Steve Herbeck to, you know, say limericks. I don't know.
Yeah. It could be some costumes involved. There's going to be special guests. I can guarantee you that.
There will be guest specials and special guests.
We'll try to get Elmer up there, Mikniak, all the speakers, you know, individually, get them up there and razz them.
I just want to harass Matt Rayleigh.
All the outlaws of muskie fishing.
The outlaws of muskie fishing. Yeah, pretty mainstream, but you know, anyway. It'll be fun. So if you're waiting around, if you can't make it to the Bash or whatever, you're going to hear some fun stuff from next week for the live podcast. If you're coming to the Bash, be sure to stick around and we'll do something. We don't know what capacity, but we're definitely going to record a live one of these. And got that going on, Jay.
That and a million other things.
Got that going on. We're trying to figure out. We got parking situations. We've got freaking staging, PA. So it's been crazy. But I'll tell you.
If you're coming to the Bash, it's free. Just to clarify, the bash is free. There's no charge, and the parking's free too. And there should be enough parking, but if you can not bring a boat to the bash, it'll probably help out in the long run.
Mm-hmm. But how else are you going to get your boat signed by Joe Bucher?
That'd be a first.
Can you sign my boat? Hey man, can you sign my boat? You know, don't fret. However, we will have the Ranger Owners VIP set up for all of the VIPs in attendance.
Yes, we will.
We will have Ranger Ambassador Matt Raley there. If we can get his cheese, we're working on it. So
he keeps sending me pictures of cheese,
dude.
Hot, spicy cheese too. He said real men enjoy this. You know, I don't even know what he's talking about.
Whew.
We'll have some cheese in the sun
and deviled eggs.
Yes.
Don't forget the deviled eggs. If you bring a plate of homemade, disgusting deviled eggs to the bash, I will give you a thing. You've just got to walk around to strangers, but deviled egg, anyone?
That's a really weird thing to ask someone to do, by the way.
I am. you know me well enough. The podcast is me on best behavior. My brain is like a rat's nest of weird, Jay.
That's true.
That is true. So, you know, everything, I had just have a surreal vision of how weird could we get. I love awkward. That's my problem. Okay. So the awkward, the weirder, the better.
Yeah.
That's just how I roll. So anyway, we're going to do that. And dudes, if you want free shit, oh my God, do we have free shit to give away?
We've got a lot of baits. Yeah. We've got in the neighborhood of 200 musky lures that'll be raffled off for free. When you get there, you'll get a free raffle. You'll get a raffle ticket, and then you are going to be emceeing. So then you're going to do raffles. I think at 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock
somewhere in that
big raffle session. Yeah,
we got raffle sessions.
Got some rods. Got some musky nets. Some big stuff, but a lot of lures. That's the main thing.
I'm not happy about the raffle idea. My original idea was we just let people fight it out in the parking lot. Like, we got this bait. Fight for it. But we figured out the safest way is raffle tickets.
Safety first.
Safety first. So there will be no hand-to-hand combat for baits. I thought it,
No. Well, we got Mikniak running security, so, hey.
Oh,
no worries. You know what I mean?
He's in danger abatement. Oh God. Yeah. It'll be fun. We're gonna give away a bunch of stuff. So I think I didn't pre-screen, but I saw one question when I was copy and pasting them about what we're gonna do for the bash for people who can't make it. We're gonna film all the seminars and we're gonna put them out over the winter, right? Or as time allots in between videos.
Hold on. It's a great idea.
Somebody was just beeping me. Oh, the fun thing about that beep, if you've been waiting for a Spitfire chatterbait, the Kamikaze, they will be available in some quantities at the bash. Jay, I haven't even told you that yet, but they will be up there. So, got some special ones coming in. We have been working on, dude, I've got a collar that I came up with called Joker, which is like a white head chartreuse blade, purple skirt with a chartreuse body in flashaboo. So we're gonna have some custom flashaboo Spitfire Kamikazes at the bash and some other stuff. That was just my dude texting me about that, so that'll be a bonus. Some other cool stuff going on, and I'm sidetracked, but we've got Chaos is coming out, right?
Yeah, looks like Rick Albers, the owner of Chaos Tackle, is going to be there with the table, among several other manufacturers.
Right.
Shimano.
Hooked on Musky Baits.
Akuma.
Hakuna Tatata.
I think H2, I just saw an email come in. I'm at home here. It looks like, H2O Tackle is going to be here now, too.
H2O.
So we're going to scramble for some more table room, I guess.
Table room.
There's a lot of manufacturers coming.
This has gotten out of hand.
Cool. If you ever had a question on the particulars of your favorite musky lure manufacturers, it would be a good time to check them out and talk to these people firsthand.
And so we're gonna have some fun with it. But yeah, dude, this has gotten out of hand. We're actually sort of scared. But
bring, a little bit.
Yeah, bring all your people. But what I was saying is we're gonna film a lot of this for everybody's benefit. We'll put it on the app. We'll probably put it on the YouTubes. We might even play audio on the podcast. Who knows? But that's it. We'll shut up about it.
Yeah.
Promise this is the last time you'll hear us talk about it, because next week is the live podcast and we might do some wrap up or whatever, but we're having fun with it. Watch the video with me and Peter Mina. Watch it. Watch it twice.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
It's a dandy. So anyway, we got to shut up and just get to it and get some Q&A out of the way. We've got a lot of questions coming up here. So here she blows. Zach. Actually, this is what I saw her. So he says, for all the unfortunate folks that won't make the bash, what are we doing? Literally what we just said. We appreciate your support. He said it's an 18-hour drive, dude. That's tough. So, Rick says, hello. Love the podcast.
Meow.
What's the perfect all-around musky rock?
The perfect all-around, all-purpose musky rod.
The do-it-to-it stick.
Well, if you talk to someone like Stephen Paul, he would say nine-footer. Mm-hmm. Something in the heavy range, something in the 2 to 6 ounce range is right there, right in the power band.
I will throw a freaking rattle trap, or I will throw a double-tail pounder on that. Don't care.
Yep. I'm more of an 8'6 guy, but 8.5-foot rod. There's a lot of shield rod models that fall into that category. There's a lot of good rod manufacturers these days. A lot of people. Even outside the normal musky realm.
Uh-huh.
You know, like Akuma, for example. Right. Not known as a musky company, per se, but, you know, their EVX lineup has been out for years, and it's really good stuff.
It's great
stuff. They didn't start the telescoping, you know, long rods that telescope for musky. I mean, those have been around, and you know, certainly something that probably carried over from the bass world initially, but great stuff and really well priced too. I mean, if you want something under $150, Kuma EVX.
That we we've talked rods a lot.
You've got some of those too, right?
I do. That's what I actually use for spinning rods. I've told that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you modified your. Mm-hmm, that's right.
That's a great rod. I'll give you the breakdown when it comes to rods. For budget rods, right? Sub 150. Akuma. Right? It's a good rod.
Yeah, that's probably looking at. Right. Yeah.
To me, the best bang for the buck rod, period, is the shield rod. Obviously, we're biased, but I'll tell you what, I'll go up against anything. Because if you look at some of these other rods of your tackle companies that make these rods that are budget friendly, their freaking rods are like the blanks on them are huge, right? I'm talking flat out, I don't care. Like a Tackle Industry rods, those rods are like superbly wide because to get the strength, they've made a really big blank. If you look at Chaos's rods, Chaos and Tackle Industries use the same blanks in general. And so, like, those price points, if you look at, like, say, a shield rod is a smaller blank. It's more of a lighter, easier-to-throw rod in that class. You know, if you go, like, the shield rods are, what, 179 or 2 something right now, Jay? Somewhere in that ballpark?
150 to 220.
Right, somewhere in that.
Depending on the length and the model.
So, if we're in that, hey, I got to get a rod in the threes. No more than $300. The wife will kill me. The girlfriend will kill me. I'll live in my car and be homeless kind of stuff. Shield rod's bad. I mean, I don't care. I will sit here all day long. Whatever rod you've got in that price range, shield rod's going to smoke it. I promise you, on my name, on anything, that thing's going to smoke it. We spent a lot of time in the design, a lot of time on the R&D on that rod to make it like just excel. Once you get past that, once you get into, and you know I love Shimano Skix, right? Shimano Skix, what, $400 rod? somewhere in that ballpark, $399, I think.
$350.
We're above three. We're up to that, maybe that next.
Yeah, maybe $400.
Right.
Yeah, I think they're $399.
Right. Would that next jump up, you know, you're getting into St. Croix territory and all that stuff. I love the Skicks. If the rods I own that are in my boat, you'll see it at the Bash, is Akumas, shield rods, and I have a Shimano Skicks on the boat because we're waiting on some 9.6 shield rods.
Yep. Right?
We'd already have them if it wasn't for all the stupid stuff with shipping and supplies. But that's it. I don't need anything else. I troll all 8 foot. Are they 8.6? Yeah, they're eights. They're eights. The trolling rod. It's their live bait and trolling rod, the shield rod. They're just durable as crap, dude. That's what I love about the shield rod. When I get above that, when I'm going to pay $300, $400, $500, even $600, man, it better do something, right? As you jump up in price on rods, I feel that quality plateaus at about where we're at with shield rods.
I think one thing people look at when they want to spend money, when they want to go with the high end route, you know, it's just like, you know, maybe a $400, $500, $600, like you said, mm-hmm. St. Croix or something like that. It better be a lot lighter, but when you actually take the weight of the rod, you know, you're mm-hmm. looking at maybe a 10-15%
total weight saving. You're paying more
Who cares?
You get what I'm saying. And I don't know a great way to paraphrase it other than that once we get out past the shield rod, and that, trust me, me and you had long conversations. How do you feel about the shield rods? You know, la da 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 da, before we started pushing them, before I started getting mm-hmm. behind that. I'm not one that's going to just sort of throw something out there and go, boo. But the way I see it is like, yes, is that rod budget friendly, but does it have the features? Does it hold up? I've worked one every day for a long time now and is going strong. Trolled the crap out of them, hundreds of fish on these things. So it sort of checked all these boxes over time in the initial thing. But once you get past that, the benefits, like Jay said, the benefits are not big jumps anymore. Right, we sort of with the shield rod, we've sort of set a benchmark for quality at cost. Once you get past that, you're going to have massive jumps in quality. It might be a little better. It's not going to be diametrically opposed. It's not going to be like going from, you know, some Gander Mountain $30 piece of crap to a shield. You know what I'm saying? You go from a shield rod to a St. Croix. Yeah, you might have a little bit, the eyelets might be a little bit fancier, or this might be a little bit fancier. You're going to pay a lot more for a lot less.
Well, one thing with shield rod versus the highest of high-end St. Croix, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you want a St. Croix at three times the price.
Right.
It's going to be a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But the shield rod has that Toray graphite,
mm-hmm.
and it has a shield aramid coating over the blank for strength. There's something called in the rod industry, they call it like a wall fracture.
Right.
And that's something you can't see. But if rods do break, it's always along a fracture point. And mm-hmm. fracture is like, let's say you're working a bait right. and
it shocks.
Everybody's done this a million times. You're working a bait like a jerk bait and you're pounding the bait. Pounding the rod down and you bang the gunwale of the boat, you know, you just knock it, bang. Mm-hmm. There's a little fracture in that rod, might be microscopic, but over time, you know, that fracture could be an issue.
Repetitive,
you know,
with the rod breaking. Yeah.
So, and obviously, you know, when rods get stepped on and, you know, the car door, you know, snap, you know, comes down on it or something like that, might not break the rod, but you know, you damaged it and there's a definite weak spot there. So it's one thing with the shield rods, good luck trying to break one.
Yeah,
really, they're tough. Pretty much indestructible. And it's crazy.
You know, and if you want to, like, it sounds like we're hard selling you, but we both just believe in it. But if you go from the perspective that the same commentary could be made from a Mojo to Legend tournaments and things of that nature. You know, if you're in that ballpark, you know, the Mojos have changed a lot. I liked the split grip, like 8-6s a few years back when that was sort of like primo big rod. Dude, if I'm going to spend a bunch of money, I want it to be like bad to the bone. And I just feel like when I get in that cost, that level of some of the rods anymore, I don't feel like I'm getting what I paid for. I feel like I got a good rod. It's better than average, but you just go, bah. I bought a name. You know, it's like,
yeah. Well, hey, you know what? I was just thinking we have the only 9.6 prototype telescoping shield rod at the store.
Yep.
You have not seen that, I don't believe.
No, I will.
It came in. Yeah, we should remind me. We should bring that out and put it on display and get people's feedback on it.
Absolutely, I will.
Yeah.
I plan on stealing it for the bug.
I know. Hey, what happened to that demo? I don't know.
I have no clue, boys.
Going back to Tennessee.
Here's this new video. Now it's dude. The other thing is this: if you're a super budget, You got $100. I love the 8.6 Bulldog Predator rods. I think it's a great rod for the money. Right? If you got $100, I've got an old reel and I need a rod. Bulldog Predator rod. Heck of a deal. I don't know. Are they still $100? Are they still 99 or they've gone up? Jay, I haven't looked in a long time.
100, 110, right around there.
You can't, like, there's stuff for every budget. And at a certain point in God, as someone that has a podcast every week and talks musky fishing and talks a lot about gear, it's sort of speaking out of both sides of my mouth. But at a certain point, you just got to take a rod and you got to make it work. You know, you can really chase unicorns sometimes with gear. I talked about that on the boat today about, you know, you don't fish a bunch of different rods. I fish one rod. I have figured out how to do everything effectively with one rod because I don't want to sit and go, what's this? What's that? What's this? Just get a rod and fish and get good with that one rod. The one all around rod, 8.6 to 9.6, heavy. That's it. Moving on. You know what I'm saying? That's where I'm at.
Yep.
All right. Jean, there's like one of those fancy French things. Am I saying he's got the little swoopus over his name? Swoopus. Jean. Or huh? Jean. I don't know what this guy's name. Is it Jean or Jean or Jean Valjean or John Valjean?
Jean-Claude.
Oui. It says Jay. Yeah. What are your thoughts on spinnerbait fish for rivers? I think we got a Frenchman. Are you chasing cabbage dragons up there? There's Johnny June. Jean Valjean. Quebec. Tampa Bay.
He's asking,
Lightning.
What are my thoughts on spinnerbaits for rivers?
Yeah. What are your thoughts? Well, lay it on me. Love them.
That's a big, important weapon in my arsenal. Smaller spinnerbaits in river situations. Fish rivers a lot. And it's something you could work slow.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely work through cover, rip it through weeds, covers a lot of the bases. There's other options, but you know, shoreline musky fishing in river situations where you have that literal cover you can see, there's almost nothing better.
We were gabbing on the phone the other day, and you'd brought up and something to refresh you, which I loved that you brought up was, when you're fishing these rivers, that once you get out to the current with a spinnerbait, the blades won't collapse like a bucktail. You know what I'm saying? If you got good current, sometimes you're fishing a bucktail off a cover on the side of a river. You come out into the current, the blades sort of act up where a spinnerbait won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so okay. If you've got a number nine or a willow leaf, once you break into the current, bam, right? We've crossed the threshold from slack water into current, the blades won't collapse. On occasion, not only occasion, it happens, you can actually feel bait shift. If we're moving in serious water, double eights will collapse sometimes. you know, baby girls, anything that's two blades, you've got current pushing against that. It'll run funky where, like, you know, the spinner baits, and why you focus on spinner baits on rivers is the blades aren't going to collapse and they're going to run regardless of that sort of that rate of flow, you know. And then I'll tell you, like, heavy current willow leaves, man, that's one thing you can look at is willow leaf blades really don't stop. And so that's one reason when we're fishing rivers or focused on rivers that style of bait sort of excels.
Yeah, I like the willow leaf in that situation too. It tends to run a little bit deeper, a little bit different vibration than your normal Colorado style.
Mm-hmm.
And when you stop the bait and let it helicopter down a little bit, you know, it's spinning all the way down, deadly. Yep.
Good stuff. Luke, we got the Frenchies. Luke, Jean Valuc, Luc Verjun. Luke says, long-time podcast listener. He said, I expect this to start a good old-fashioned tangent. So I frequently, Jay.
It's a tough word, Steve.
Sound it out, Steve. Sound it out. So
frequently.
I frequently fish the Lac du Flambeau chain in northern Wisconsin. It's a deep, clear Cisco and smelt based lake system.
LDF.
DTF. I focus mainly on fishing the deep weed edges and points closest to deep water. Rock humps, generally weeds, you know, they're petering out 12 to 15s. Humps are at the 10 to 15. Fish are super boat shy and will follow bucktails and jerkbaits to the boat, but seem gun shy to eat. I've seen most of my action with fish actually eating on Poseidon 10s, but have had trouble getting hooks into them. I'm wondering about possible bait mods to increase my hookup ratio on Poseidon's, other lures that have similar actions and running depths to increase this. I'm also interested in your opinions about what I could do converting spooky fish and far. So here's what's going on. Dude's fishing clear water. He's getting whacked on his Poseidon 10. Wacky, whack, whack, whack. Not hooking up.
Yeah.
They're not getting hooked up on bucktails. They're not hooking up on jerk baits. And when they get boat side, they're spooky, ooky.
Well, yeah, Lac du Flambeau chain is classic tough water.
Classic.
No question about it. It's a chain of lakes that there is 1, 2, 3, 4. There's like 5 or 6 of them that are good size. There's a couple little tiny puddles adjacent to a few of them. But fantastic big fish water, low density. There's big everything in that chain.
Mm-hmm.
But basically look at it this way too, from left to right, the lakes are easier to work.
Mm-hmm.
Pokegama, and then it goes Flambeau. Those are kind of weed based lakes. But as you go to the east, if you go to the right on a map, they get tougher. They get, less weed orientated and more just kind of like, by the time you get to Fence Lake, Fence is one of the biggest lakes in Vilas County, and it's deep, clear, and it just looks like all the humps are barren. You know what I mean? There's not much there. It's just like sand humps. So classic plastics water, classic deep diving crankbait water, depth raiders, whatever. It just is. I mean, you want the baits getting down, you know, you want the baits getting down 10 plus feet,
right?
Without question. So great plastics water. If you can slow roll big spinner baits that get down deep, that would be another tip. And head classic low light situation. I mean, it's tough water.
Here's what I'll say about the Poseidons in particular. And we actually had somebody ask about hooks, I think last week on these baits. My Poseidons have changed the hooks. I find that the hooks that come on those baits are very, very, very hard. It's a very dense metal in some regard, and I find it difficult to sharpen to a point that I go, that's a great point, right? So I like to switch the hooks out on those things. I have put 6-0s on those things. I think some 5s. I think stock, are they a 4 or 5, Jay, on a Poseidon?
Oh, I'm guessing 5. But,
so,
I have to look at one.
5s or 6s. What I like to do on that is I will bury one point into the body, because notoriously fish will grab that thing in the middle, in between the hooks, and you got to set the hooks. He's got a hold of the plastic. You've really got to move that through his teeth to get near him.
Yeah.
So I like to bury the front hook in the body at least, if not both. On that tail hook, I always try to make sure that I've got the split ring of slack when I put the hook in there, so it can still swing freely. It's not going to affect the action. But if a fish has got that thing T-boned in the middle, he's between the hooks. He's not near a hook. If that thing's already buried in the plastic, I feel like I've got a better chance of hitting him. And you've got to hit those fish on plastics hard. You've got to hit those fish as hard as you can, because they will T-bone, they will headshot, and you're just pulling that through their teeth to make it connect. So I'll go up to a 6-aught, and I will take the stock hooks off, go with probably a thinner gauge hook that's going to sharpen to a far better point so I can get hook penetration on that. I will have my drag cranked on those baits, and I am, you know, ready to load the toad, if you will, Jay. I'm ready to blast them. Like, the hook sets on those swim baits, you've got to hit those fish hard, hard, hard. But burying in the hooks in the body is the best thing I can tell you. You know, when it comes to swim baits, I like to sort of just have black and white, which allows me to have some of the swimming dogs, have some of the Poseidons, our buddy Mike up in Canada with the Water Wolf. What I like about Water Wolf, which we're going to have at the shop here shortly, and some different stuff, and they were, you know, is in between sizes, because like if I can get a 7-inch swim bait, if they'll hit a 7, it's way easier to hook them than on a 10. Like, if you can get them on the smaller sizes, the hookup ratio seems way better to me.
Like, yeah, I think you're right.
This past winter, I had fished, like, so many fish hit swimming dogs in between the hooks. It was infuriating. Right? I was just, like, livid. I was taking a piece of multi-strand wire and running a second front hook. So it was, like, hook buried in, second hook, and then the back hook on the big ones, just to have that fill that void in between these hooks. You know, it seems like with a glider, man, they head shoot gliders, they head shoot this, they head shoot that. For some reason, I think some of these soft plastics, those fish, and not even a bulldog as much as just the swim baits, it's a higher percentage of these fish hitting like belly, hitting right in the middle of that bait. I don't know why. Seems to be the case. So you could add a third hook. You know, you probably won't run into any legality there. You can, just with split rings even, add a center hook on it. At times, I'll leave the two hooks hanging down and a buried center hook. Just try burying the hooks in the plastic so you know when he's grabbing that, those hooks are going to be closer to the face. They're not just hanging on either side of him. And make sure you load that toad, baby. Hit them hard, hard, hard.
Yeah, it's like
hard.
Yeah. Think of it as live bait fishing, like you're fishing suckers in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If he
hammer it,
he hits, drop the rod and jack him.
It's just like a sucker, you know. The bait isn't moving when you set the hook.
Right.
You know, you got to try to move the hooks.
Move the hooks. Mike says, "What would you guys be trolling on Lake St. Clair?" Like, I think he means Lake St. Clair. Lakes and Clair. Have you ever been to Clair's, Jay? They usually have stores.
Oh, Clair.
They have them there at the mall. You can get your ears pierced at Clair's.
I think they do a lot of trolling out on Lake St. Clair, from what I understand.
Fire Tiger Shad Rap.
Oh, sounds like there's a million options. People have caught fish trolling virtually everything you can think of out there, from bucktails
to Poseidons to fire tiger shad wraps.
Yeah, but they like the shallower running stuff.
Like,
yeah,
a fire tiger shad wrap.
I've never fished out there, but what about shad wraps?
I've heard good things about fire tiger shad wraps. So, oh, man. Yeah, that would be my vote. dude. I mean, it's a day-to-day bite. There's obviously not a great thing. The one thing, and I mean, you look at like Homer LeBlanc, man, that came from Trolling St. Clair.
Okay.
You know? What, your believers? Okay. Your swim whizzes?
Yeah, shallow setting.
I might harken back to that. I mean, it's
jointed shallow raider.
Jointed shallow raider, even, or a fire tiger shad rep. hint. But yeah, just look at those mid-sized baits. It seems like a lot of open water trolling there. That would be at least a good direction to go. You know, if you're out there grinding on St. Clair, the best thing I can tell you on a body of water like that, which is so dynamic, is spend a day with a guide. Because that can really be a funky piece of water in its own right. You know, I'm not going to sit here and be, I'm not a purported expert on Lake St. Clair by any means. But that might be beneficial because you're going to have a lot of seasonality in that bite.
Mm-hmm.
You just are. So yeah, there's not like, there's never like a magic bait. But those mid-sized baits, I wouldn't go out there just jacking 14-inch Jakes and 13-inch Grandmas all day. All right. Sam says, heard the talk about Warlocks. I own one, but I don't like the way it works. Or else I don't know how to work it. Bent the tail so it should rise, but haven't got it to work. It doesn't turn quickly in the right way I want to know or what I need to do. I've found they have a faster sink rate than Hellhounds do and Mantas. I like a glide in a 3 to 0.5 ounce range, and the Warlock is a bit heavy. Any advice on how to tune these baits, get them working better, get comfortable with them? I love Warlocks.
Just don't bend it much. That's a classic mistake with, or a
classic blunder
with Suex too, because they have metal tails, and guys would always go overboard when they try to tune it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd bend too much, and the thing would just not run right. So. Very, very small
adjustments.
Kind of increments is going to, adjustments are going to put in the,
as far as
in the zone. I mean, they run fine without, you know, messing with the tail. It comes perfectly straight out of the box. So
as far as, sink rate goes, man, we're fishing with gliders. If you're fishing gliders when you should fish them, it's negligible in some regard. You know, we can get into some hang time. We'll get into some crazy stuff. But, you know, when it comes to the Warlocks, as far as tuning, like Jay just said, incremental change. Don't make a drastic change. A little change will mean a lot. That bait is a quick bait. But Warlocks, I'll say this. A Warlock is quick side to side, really good glide. But I'm trying to think of how I want to say this. I look at the Warlock as the intermediary. It is the gray area between production gliders and custom gliders. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a Hellhound, a Phantom is dime a dozen. There's a billion of them. You can get them, you know, everywhere kind of deal. You know what I'm saying? And the Phantom's changed in some regard, but, you know, you could walk down to Joe Schmo's tackle shop and buy a Hellhound in some places.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the every man's glide bait. I love them. I love Hellhounds. Love Phantoms. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying that is the every man's glide bait. Warlock is sort of like that next step up, right? You know, it's a tick above a Manta, and it's like, to me, it's like a Manta but tunable, and sort of in this gray area where you've got to use it purposefully. Right? You've got to fish that bait with intention. So a Warlock is not something I'm going to go for when I'm looking for a fish, when I'm looking for a pattern. I'm not going to search for a fish with that. I'm going to go. Muskies are located at 7 feet to 9 feet deep. They're eating this forage. They're moving at this time of day. I need this size and profile. I can take this tail and get it to do what I need to do moving on. Right? I fished that bait with intent. So if it's running shallow and it's running screwed up, that might be right, but you need to have things dialed in with intent. Okay? So this is some ninja shit where we go, I have fished for 4 days. Let's say we got a long weekend or something like that. And you have paid attention, you've done your homework, and you go, I'm moving fish on this bait and that bait, but I need to get a bait that does this. That is in the conversation for me. So a warlock could be an intentional bait that accomplishes a goal that I need to get done. I need a bait with hang time or a bait that's going to rub subsurface that I can contour at these depths. That's the same way I perceive a suik, the same way I perceive tubes. So baits that have a lot of versatility to them are usually intent baits. You know, a freaking top raider and a bucktail, that's I'm going musky fishing. Crankbait, I'm going musky fishing. We get up to headlocks and warlocks and baits with variable weighting system, baits that do a lot of different things. Those are a purpose-built tool. I approach my warlocks as, okay, muskies have been following. Okay, perfect example, and I'm trying to get this out and make as much sense as possible. I go into a flat, and it tapers. We're in a bowl-shaped cove, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've fished a bunch of these all day long. I'm getting follows. I am getting followed by mid-class fish. They're following hellhounds, right? But they want them fast, but they won't come up and eat them, right? So the way a hellhound runs, if I run it fast, I move fish. So let's walk the scenario here. I am moving fish on a glider, but they won't hit it if it's going slower. They won't follow if it's coming slow, but I need a quicker glider to get their attention, but they're not eating it. Time to break out the manta, tune it so it's running deeper so I can run it in the same speed as a hellhound, but it's going to run deeper and it's right there in their face.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Intent. It's a concept. A lot of guys that have spent a lot of time in the game, you know what I'm saying. You go, I'm doing this. It's one of those baits where if I leave the dock and I'm dialed in on a warlock thing, I might be throwing two baits that day. Right? Because I already know what they want. I'm dialed in. I know what the pattern is. I need a tool to help me present to the pattern that is currently going on. That's what I think of when I come to a warlock. If you're just looking to cover water and you're looking to move fish, throw a phantom, throw a hellhound.
Let's say that's working for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Okay, it's working. Okay, you know, I'm seeing them on hellhounds, blah, blah, blah. Putting mm-hmm. it, switching to warlock, blah, blah, boom, blah, blah, boom. Getting it going. All of a sudden, 3 hours go by, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What is the first bait you would switch to?
If I went hellhound, I had action.
And I just threw 3 hours out there. I mean, whatever, you know.
So
it looks like, okay, God, we can't get nothing going now. They're not responding to anything now. So my pattern's over.
So I went, the scenario you're giving me is I moved fish on a hellhound.
Yeah.
I caught a fish by dialing in on a warlock.
Yeah, let's say you caught one. Yeah,
and now it's
38
over.
Or something.
Right. Yeah. And everything's the same. Weather hasn't changed anything. It's just different part of the day. I'm going to go to rubber.
Okay. Yeah. It's not like it's last hour of light or anything.
No. I'm going to go to
rubber. It's 4 o'clock
perfect,
in the afternoon.
Perfect example of that, and I can give you chapter and verse.
Okay.
About an hour before I caught the toad fish from the latest episode, or the episode before the Pete episode, right?
Yep.
I caught one of the biggest fish of the year on a tap dancer.
Chaos mini tap dancer, yep.
I was running shallow glide baits, right? I had started with, I believe, a secret project dive and rise that you know about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I proceeded to throw a the 7-inch phantom. I moved some fish, nothing happened. Went down to the tap dancer, connected monster fish. Nothing happened for a while. I just caught a dinosaur of a muskie. You've seen it,
mm-hmm.
Jay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dinosaur. Caught that fish. Nothing happened for a while. I didn't sit there and beat the freaking paint off that tap dancer. I continued to adjust. And so the tap dancer got laid down, and I went to the toad because I go gliders, rubber. Right? That's just where my brain goes.
Toad being in a slow, erratic presentation, it's not like you all of a sudden switch to bucktails, like, oh, we got to speed it up or something like that.
It's hang time off the bottom versus hang time over the bottom.
Right? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. A glide bait worked appropriately in the correct conditions is going left, right, pause, left, right, left, pause. A toad is going up, pause, up, up, pause. It's reaching the same level in some regard if we're fishing this theoretical shallow flat or some scenario. And it's creating hang time and pause, but it's doing it vertically. My assumption would be in that scenario, as the day wore on, the fish went a little bit deeper, and now they're just hanging, so I had to put something in their face. And the whole thought process that I'm trying to convey would be the same old adage that we have with bucktails. You go, okay, if they're not moving on 10s, we go to 8s. If they're not moving on 8s, we go to 7s, and then we go to 5s, and we go to giant killers, and then we go to this, and we go to that, and yada, 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 right? I tried to draw those corollaries between bait classes of bait classes that sort of exist in the same realm. So, you know, glide baits and rubber are in the same realm to me, right? Even with some of the stuff I'm doing with tubes cross-pollinate with glide baits if you do some different stuff. Right. You've seen some of those tricks. So to find effectiveness out of different bait classes and know the move. I think I've talked about this before, but I'll convey it again. And we're off on a way big tangent. Oh, well. Find corollaries between bait classes so you know where to go. You don't catch a fish on a hellhound, right? Slow moving a hellhound. 1, 2, pause. 2, 2, pause. 1, 2, 3, pause. And then go to burning top raiders. It just doesn't work. It's a big jump, right? And at some point, dude, I need to do this. I've thought about this a bunch. If you guys like this idea, tell me. We need to make like a scenario thing, like whether it be like the degrees of musky fishing and baits and how they correlate, something to help people make this decision. So let's say, Jay, I am fishing a unweighted 9-inch Suic, right? I'll give you a scenario and you give me an answer. I'm fishing a weed bed in Vilas County. I'm fishing the edges of this thing. We got high puffy clouds. There's some humidity in the air, but they're not low hanging. I got good sun, but I got clouds. Da, 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 and I'm fishing a Suic, and I'm moving fish on a Suic, but I'm not catching them. Right? What's the next move? What is
it? You're fishing in the weeds, in weed pockets with a Suic, which is a good choice, by the way.
Right. Dive and rise.
Well, they move off the weeds a little bit and go a little bit deeper.
Well, I'm saying as far as bait class, and what I'll tell you what I'm thinking is this, and it's the
One thing you could do is a spinner bait, slow moving. I don't know if this is the answer you're looking for, but
it's not what I'm.
If you've got 5-foot weed beds, there's pockets. Actually, a Suic is a really good, a 9-inch unweighted Suic is a really good choice. That's something I would use.
Right, that would be the goat.
Personally, because they're very weedless.
That very weedless. But what I'm saying is this, is I should preface that, and we're freewheeling here. We're just trying to conceptualize. Is we have determined in the scenario that it's the dive and rise action that's doing it. Right? So maybe the spinner bait might work, but that straight retrieve nature, the pull pause wouldn't work. I quickly, in my mind, instead of jumping to a spinnerbait, I go, if they're moving on a Suic, but they're not eating a Suic, I quickly would go to a slammer of a crane in the 7-inch fashion, ripping it and letting it come up. Rip up, rip up, rip up. Right?
And work any pockets that way.
Working the pockets that way.
Yeah.
And
so
making that move, and then like you said, in that scenario of like, if nothing's happening, where's the next move going to the spinnerbait and things of that nature? So trying to draw, and it's like I said, there's a lot of, you just do a lot of this stuff instinctually, but if you think about your baits and you think about the different bait classes, How do they work? Do they work in similar fashion? What makes them enticing? What makes them triggering to a muskie? Right. And how can I make moves? What's my next move after I've had success or I've had a follow? Because we all know I got a follow. He didn't eat downsize. Okay. That's 101. The next step is going action, observing action. I hope I'm not going off too much of a tangent here, but you know, if you look at like different crankbaits, I mean, each crankbait sort of has its own thing. So observe the action of your baits, observe how they react in the water, you know, how far they advance when you pull them, rip them, twitch them. And then you can start watching other baits and you go, that is not that different from that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay,
that's not doing anything too different. I mean, you're talking, if you start talking reefs, man, shallow bulldogs and suiks are water movers over reefs. You know, mm-hmm. You talk to the guys that fish Canio. What are you fishing? Well, this guy might fish 12-inch suiks, and this guy might fish shallow water bulldogs. Bigo. They're both having results in the similar scenarios. Just observing what the baits do and how you can apply it. I don't know. I'm off on a big ninja level tangent.
Well, I think that is the question right there. It's kind of like what we were just both talking about is. Everybody wants to start out, it seems like, especially when they're on a trip. I'm just envisioning someone going to Canada or something mm-hmm. like that. It's just like, okay, we're on big fish water, and it's July, and I hear they love double tens.
Right.
So they're throwing double tens. Okay. They're not following. They're not responding to the fast-moving, you know, topwaters mm-hmm. and bucktails. So that means you've got to make an assessment.
Make an assessment and
start downsizing and start going to those jerk baits and figure right. it out with the Steve Paws method.
Steve Paws. I'll say this, and I'm just enjoying where we're going with things. You'll see this, you know, once the bash is over and we're fishing. How do you figure out a bite? Screw the rest of Q&A. Let's just riff on this. How do you figure out a pattern? Wow. Big question. Okay. This should have just been the whole podcast. This is more fun. I apologize if we answer your questions. We'll get to them.
It should have been the whole podcast. Well, last Saturday, I was out fishing, and I was throwing uh-huh. the 9-inch suic.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it was an HI suic. Right. Impact. And I'm working that baby. I'm bringing it in. And I threw it for quite a while, and I never saw a fish.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a good day.
Okay. Here's how.
That's the end of my story. Not every day you can connect. And
you've got to do it all. Okay. So you'll notice this when we're fishing here and after the bash in a day or two. What I will do on a new body of water, if I've not fished it, right? I'm hours away here from being confronted with tons of new water in Wisconsin that I have to figure out. I love it. What do you do? A, and forget it. This is good stuff, I think.
Okay.
Am I on clear water? Am I on stained water? Right?
So you're determining a color choice right
off the bat? Color choice.
Okay.
So I'm going to look at, am I on clear? Am I on stained? What are the weather conditions, water conditions. So weather and water. Is it overcast? Is it sunny? Is the water clear or stained? I'm mm-hmm. going to refer to my color chart. It's the Booker color chart in the app. My goodness, it doesn't matter if you're throwing custom painted baits or whatever the heck you're throwing. It'll get you there close enough, right? So you sort of have a spectrum of what you should throw. So, you know, on the stain stuff, I might throw some brighter colors. I might have that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make an assessment, Jay, of water. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make an assessment of weather. My water assessment will dictate my color. So I'm going to figure that out. Okay. It is tannic. I'm on a tannic body of water.
Dark.
On this body of water today, it is cold front, right? It's cold front.
So the clouds are white, if there are any clouds at all.
And they're high.
Yep.
I might be. The clouds are. Who knows? So I've got to figure out what lures I should use, what color in this scenario. So it's tannic, so I'm going to go brighter, a little unnatural, a little louder, a little more standouty. Yeah. And I'm going to go with baits that are effective in cold fronts. So I'm going to dig in my tackle box. I'm going to get out.
Right, so you're going to eliminate right off the top of the bat.
Bucktails topwater.
Bingo.
Gone. Get them out of there.
I don't know what. That was so funny.
Right. So bucktails and topwater, they're staying in the box. I'm going to, and we'll probably deal with this. And what I will do is I'll get in my box and I will go two rubbers. I need two rubbers. I need outlaws, Jay. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
No, sorry. This is a bad inside joke going on here. So I need two rubber baits. I'm going to probably go with a loud bulldog and an all white Medusa. When it comes to chaos stuff, I fish black and white. That's it. I have some eel pout because they're pretty, but I'm going to go with a white bait that's going to stand out in this cold front. I might go with a loud bulldog. Lay them on the deck. Next, I'm going to go to my gliders. I'm going to go a loud glider, a white glider in most scenarios, and a downsized glider. Lay them on the deck. I'm going to always go, I don't care if it's tannic, cold, whatever it is. Going to get the crane out. Going to get probably a jointed shallow raider out, you know. And then what else am I missing here? As far as just off the rip of what I would do in that scenario, I'm going to grab a dive and rise. Okay.
Yeah, dive and rise, a glide bait, and some.
And I'm going to grab a couple though. So it's two rubber baits, two to three gliders, a couple dive and rise, a couple twitch baits, and I'm going to lay them on the deck. Right? They're at my feet. They're ready to go. That's the baits that I'm starting with. Okay.
They're probably pretty close to your pant leg too, judging from some of the videos.
Jesus, it's a mess always. Keep them out of your pants, but you know what I'm saying. The baits are out there. They're at my disposal. I have made bait decisions already. I'm not thinking about baits any longer. Forget the baits. I've got every bait I could possibly need out on the deck, quote unquote. Okay, cool. Now, what am I going to do to figure out what the fish are doing on these different class of baits? I'm going to go to the areas that you've heard us talk about a billion times. Where do fish go in cold fronts? What do they do? Right? What do they do? Well, I'm going to go fish those areas, and I'm not going to go, I really like throwing Medusas, dude. And I do this, and everybody does this. Every muskie fisherman like has baits they like to throw. Who cares what you like? Start with, let's say you like Medusas, then start with it and set in a freaking timer in your phone or an alarm for 15 minutes. 15 minutes, boot, switch baits. 15 minutes, switch baits. 15 minutes, switch baits. Boom, boom, boom. Force yourself to switch baits through all the baits you have on the deck until something works. Because what will happen is we will all do it. We will go, I'm not a strong Suic fisherman, or I don't have confidence in. It's a big statement. I don't have confidence in this bait. I don't have confidence in this style of baits.
Yeah, I can't hit a 7-iron. I hate the 7-iron.
Right.
Well, learn how to use the 7-iron.
Learn how to use it.
You got to use it at some point.
Right. So spend your 15 minutes with each bait and go, in 15 minutes, you know, if you're working them at normal pace, you'll get plenty of casts in. You know, force yourself to switch baits on a timer unless something happens. You get a follow, then do the math from there. But the equation is right now it's zero sum. Work through all the baits that you've heard could work. That's it.
Try them out.
Try them out. Go through it. Go through the tackle box.
Probably your best bet.
Right. With a methodology.
You got to go percentages.
And that's it. You go, okay, this, and this allegedly works in these scenarios, or it has worked for you, or it worked for your buddy, and you work through it diligently. And the next phase of that whole scenario is the retrieves. So I've got my Medusa and my Bulldog. I've got my Hellhound and my Phantom. I've got my Suic and my mystery up and down bait, and I've got my crane and my shallowrider, right? Well, in the first rotation with Medusas, I'm going to pull pause, right? And I'm going to double pump my bulldogs. And the next time when it comes around time for me to throw these baits, I'm going to do a different retrieve. So now you're forcing yourself to do the different retrieves that you can do with these baits and run through those scenarios. Because we all do it where you either have massive bait ADD where you don't throw a bait long enough to see if it's effective, right? That's one group of people. They change baits every two casts. Or what I deal with is I think I know what the hell I'm doing and I'll go out there and throw the wrong bait all day long. You've got to force yourself to break habits that are not helping you catch fish. So the best way to pattern a lake is setting up a game plan to figure out what's going on. Right? The other way to break things down is, okay, so I'm going to do this and I'm going to go through this rotation of baits after that. And then I'm going to troll and I'm going to force myself to do these things in different time allotments until something happens. Right? That's the best way I can figure it out or articulate like a basic thought pattern. That make any sense or am I just being crazy?
Totally on point.
Totally on Toads with Toad Toderson. So, I'm your host, Toad Toderson.
Reloaded.
Retoted. You're retoted, Jay.
But, I know.
But, you know, that's the best way. And that's so... It's what I do without the freaking phone going off. It's what I naturally do, and I've taught myself.
I'm sure when you start a guide trip, any given day on the water, you already looked at the weather forecast.
Yeah,
you know the scenario. It's like, okay, we don't have any, you know, chance of rain today, or right. You know, there isn't some big front coming or whatever. It's just like, okay, wind direction, overall look of the sky, and determine right there. We're going to start with this and go from there.
And that's the thing is like, remind me about the guide in 2 seconds, but I'll say this. I've read so much shit where it's just like musky game plan. Here's your musky game plan. And it's about like just giving you an idea of where to look. And it's just like, take where you should be looking and put that in conjunction with everything you've ever heard you should throw in that scenario. Don't talk about my cousin Tommy caught a big one in a cold front on a creeper. Okay, forget that shit. Go with proven producers and work through them until something happens. You know, the way I start my guide trips is I will tell people, and for better or for worse, I'll say, I'm going to put you guys on baits that have caught muskies within the last 48 hours. Right? So I will put a guy on, say, a crankbait, and the other guy's on like a kamikaze. And those two dudes are throwing those two baits that have caught fish yesterday or the day before that they've been producing, right?
Yeah.
And I will proceed to go through all the scenarios. And the front of the boat will look stupid. And they'll go, you know, I just explain to people the best I can and be like, listen, I'm going to do things that are not working, have not proven to work in the last few days to make sure that they're not working. You see what I'm saying? I'm going to look for a different pattern. And a lot of times a client will just bang a fish and we go, cool, nothing's changed. But they might be running shallow twitch baits and I just bang a hogosaurus on a pounder. Go, okay, something's different. Or I get a deep follow. Or something tells me that, okay, what was it going on yesterday is not happening today. What do I need to do to dial in on these fish? Then I can work on getting dialed in, maybe get another follow or get a fish to eat. And now we're dialed in. While somebody in the back of the boat or the front of the boat or where they might be standing is doing what has been working and we're covering water. That's how I do that because I'm just going, okay, I can't sit here and teach a client to do this, do that, do that, do that, like all these different baits real quick, but I can sort of go through the tackle box and figure out, okay, is everything same or is everything different or what's going on? And so I rotate through things and then that allows me to either confirm or deny that the pattern is the same or it is changing. And you might not have that advantage of having a second anchor in the boat or somebody that's competent. you might have your buddy that he can throw bucktails. That's it. Well, you need to go through the rigmarole. You know, and it might not even just be a cold front, Jay. You just got to pick those baits. You go, hey, it's low hanging clouds. It is a full moon, right? I better get out my bucktails and my topwaters, right?
Try them, yeah.
And fish them, because if the conditions say these fish should be hot, things are looking good, leave the dive and rise and the pounders and all that crap away. Go bucktails, topwater, all the different sizes of the bucktails, a few different sizes of the topwaters, and a twitch bait, and go to work and get dialed in. The one thing I hear all the time, how do you get dialed in on color? Right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get dialed in on color? You have to throw. You have to throw color. Right? If I'm searching for, let's say I'm in a scenario where this weekend we're fishing a traditional Cisco style clear lake up there, right? Am I going to go and grab my pink and neon green Supergirl first?
Wouldn't be my first choice.
Right. Elimination. Eliminate things that are not going to work. Again, with musky fishing, I say it all the time, there's always a giant caveat. There is always a, well, one time.
Okay. Yeah, anything can happen. But, right. Yeah, but you got to go with the odds. And
go
it's
with
just
the
like,
odds.
You're
Statistic.
On that Cisco thing. It's like maybe throw white with nickel.
Right. And that's what I'm going to do. You're going to get in the box and go, what are Cisco-based colors? White with nickel, blue and silver, the silver rainbow cowgirls, you know, classic stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Get
mm-hmm.
those out. Maybe a chartreuse, maybe a knot, you know, some different colors, and have those out. And we go, well, and I should say that. That's a great scenario. This is such a Wisconsin thing here.
What's that?
What are they hitting? Bucktails, you know, or Fred blades. You know beyond a shadow of a doubt that on whatever lake down the road from you, they're hitting blades. You're hearing they're hitting blades. Everybody said they're hitting blades, but you don't know what blades they're hitting. Do you know how you figure that out, Jay? Throw them all.
Yeah, right.
You know,
I hear that a lot.
Right. So
of course, that was yesterday, too.
That was yesterday, but to get dialed in, you've got to go through it yourself, unless somebody's going to say, they're hitting Goldilocks, Bookertail, double eights. Okay, well, if not, you've got to sort of work yourself through that scenario and get them out on the deck. Give them equal time. I'd say the whole takeaway from this, and I'm just rambling like a fool, don't let your personal preferences dictate what you think the muskies are doing. That's probably the best thing I could say. Right? Don't let your aversion to this kind of bait keep you from catching fish. I do not like toads. I do not like suiks. I don't like fish and twitch baits. I notoriously don't fish enough bucktails because I think they're boring. That's my bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't let your personal feelings about different presentations hold you back. Fish them all effectively to get dialed in for patterns and preference. That's probably the dumbest but most to the point piece of advice you could give somebody. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
Yeah, done. I like it. Yeah.
Whatever. I don't know. Jay, I have rambled on forever. I hope you guys are like, God, he's an idiot. I'll shut up. We got to get up early and set up for the Muskie Shop Bash, July 17th, Minocqua, Wisconsin. There will be blood. All right, Jay Bird. Say goodnight.
Later, guys.